You're listening to the Just One Outdoors Podcast.
Welcome back to the Just One Outdoors Podcast. I'm Deegan Brake. I will be co-hosting along with Austin, Cam, and Clyde today. I believe we're going to talk a little bit of elk hunting.
That was pretty good. Well done.
Attaboy.
Woo!
This is our 90th episode, and I think 90th. And Cam and I have yet to really nail down an intro. That just shows how we like to podcast. We like to just fly by the seat of our pants.
Professional here.
Very. Probably should do that, but you know. Oh well.
Yeah. You say that for episode 100.
Episode 100, we'll pull out all the production stuff. Have a professional edit it. Everyone will get on and be like, "What the heck is this?"
Yeah, I was going to say, I think our intro is fine. Like, yeah, it's bland, but it's the same every time. The problem is the last several times we talk about how we don't have one, which just makes it even worse.
That's probably
negative
true.
Points.
So, well, I think I'm going to be kind of the moderator, at least asking questions. Hopefully I can come up with some, and you guys might have to help me out a little bit. But you guys were all on the elk trip. I wasn't, obviously. I was supporting from afar. But I just listened to your guys' podcast from your guys' time out there. Honestly, the recording turned out really well, and it was kind of cool knowing that you guys recorded it after the bull went down. Like, that was just a cool thing to listen to, knowing – all right, they're sitting in the mountains right now, and they've got a giant animal on the ground. That's pretty legit.
That was
I'd say it was the coolest spot. I remember at one point I was sitting there while we were recording. I was just like looking through my binos out the window.
Been raining all day and windy, and we had just gotten finished chasing some grouse, stretching our legs. It couldn't have been more perfect.
Speaking of grouse, let's dive into. Well, I'll make fun of you and then you can make fun of me because that's how it's going to go. But I have yet to post. I need to post a video of how bad you missed that grouse. That's the worst shot I've ever seen you take. Now, there were circumstances, but from 20 yards, you missed by like 6 feet. And that grouse just kind of looked at you and was like, "What the heck was that?"
That grouse, it was close enough to scare the grouse. At least they didn't sit there like, "What just happened?" So what happened is we decided we were going to go grouse hunting. And we took off, you know, we were driving around, and there was one. We stepped out of the truck and kind of cleared the distance that we needed to clear. And he was sitting there on a log. Well, I reached in my pocket and I looked at my wrist and realized I didn't put my release on before I left. So I shoot a wrist release, and I'm left-handed. Well, for some reason, instead of asking Clyde to borrow his wrist release, I asked Austin to borrow his thumb button. So I drew back and anchored down on this thing, thinking, "Oh, I can make this happen. You know, it's not that big of a deal." And I hit my draw cycle, and it landed pretty much perfect on my cheek. I can't make any excuses about that. But going through my shot process with a thumb button is so much different than going through it with my wrist. I like to roll through with my wrist. Well, instead of doing it with my index finger, I'm doing it with my thumb. And I can't get the stupid thing to go off. I'm fighting with it. If you watch the video, you can see me like jerking on it, trying to get it to go because I can't rotate.
Yeah.
So finally, plus it's also right-handed, I think. So mm-hmm. I'm like sitting here anchored back. And I can't anchor right because it's like trying to twist on me. So I'm like pulling, and then eventually I say screw it and just yank it for some reason, and it throws my shot about 3 feet to the left. Austin's exaggerating when he says 6, but it was about 3 feet to the left. Lost the only judo point we had because I stuck it into a log.
Buried it in a log.
Yeah, and now I'm never going to live that one down.
Okay, you said it was it was close enough to scare it. Austin's shot.
Hold on.
It didn't scare it.
Shots. Five shots.
It was like the bird was doing some like Matrix stuff and just like not even scared, just like dodging the arrows as he was shooting.
I, I came close enough to shoot feathers off. I shot feathers off.
Dude, they didn't even care.
But still, they were just like, oh, cool. I needed to shave those anyways.
Oh, man. Clyde actually shot one, though, right?
Yeah, somehow.
I
got it, like, in the back tendons of its leg and, like, pinned it to the ground.
Did you guys eat it?
Yeah. It was wonderful. I love grouse.
And then
you guys watch. Go ahead.
I was gonna say Deegan's dad killed two or three while we were out there. And so we had a nice meal of grouse. I think it was one of our last nights, and it was pretty good.
Was it the last night we had that?
Yeah,
I think so. Cause we saved them for that.
Cause that was the night the Mr. Green Jeans came by and had a talk.
Oh, yes.
Not a bad talk. It was a great talk. Pleasant guy.
Yeah.
He wanted to see if we were breaking any rules. I'm still convinced. He was asking us some questions.
Well, I mean, that is his job, is to make sure the rules are followed. And he was awesome about it. Like, it was, you know, talking to him, it kind of put it into perspective. Like, we talked about in the last episode about we're part of 5%. But then when we told him, who's literally the agent for that area, we're like, yeah, we got a bull on the ground opening day. And when he found out it was our first year, he was shocked. He was like, wait, you guys killed a bull your first year. And a 5x5 bull your first year. And like, you've all, like, opening day you did it. And we're like, yeah. He's like, dang. Like, so we kept talking, found out that the average in that area is one in every 12 years. And I was just like, I think that put it into more perspective than the 5%. Like, the 5% is like, wow, 5%. But how many, how many is that across the state? But like, one in 12 in that area, or one every 12 years, was just like, wow, that's kind of crazy to think about. But that was a fun talk with him, and got to find out a little bit more about the unit, I felt.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. We got to find out a little bit more about the recreational people that go in there, and, you know, just how many hunters there are. And he kind of talked to him a little bit. He didn't know a whole lot about the expectations for units going into next year that are going to be over the counter and all sorts of stuff. But from what he kind of described, he's like, we don't really have to worry about that one going over the counter or going draw anytime soon. So that was pretty neat getting some of that information from a local.
Is pretty crazy. I was just listening to Seek One's podcast, and I think it was Kendall. I'm not exactly sure whose voice it was. He was talking about elk hunting, though, and he says he's gone 12 years and hasn't killed anything either. So it really is remarkable that you guys were able to make it happen. Do you, like, knowing that one in every 12 years you guys had success first time out, first day, does that change your guys' opinion on it going back out there? I mean, I guess what I'm asking is, are you more confident or are you less confident taking another trip out there just based on the odds?
To be honest,
I'd say it doesn't matter. I'm going to go either way.
Yeah, but to be honest, I feel more confident. I feel like the stuff we found, we walked into it completely blind, it felt like, on opening day. I mean, even though the guys had scouted some, I had scouted with them a day, it felt like we walked into opening day completely blind, not knowing anything.
Mm-hmm.
Which, granted, with all the preparation we did and everything we did, we were prepared. My experience with Eastern turkey hunting here in Missouri is, especially on small plots of land, is if you get one bird, you need to be able to capitalize on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I preached that to Austin, Clyde, you, Cam. I preached that to everybody. When you get that shot, you can't afford to miss it. And that's kind of how it ended up with elk hunting, it feels like, is we got that one shot at that one bull, and we all knew that whoever had a shot at it, we were going to kill it. And we capitalized, but as the week went on, despite not seeing another elk, we found some spots where people don't want to go that I feel like they'll be. Mm-hmm. I mean, Austin and Clyde and I, we crossed the ridge onto another ridge and then got down in a mess of quakies or aspens, whatever you want to call them. And we cut down in there, and there was some sign that couldn't have been more than a few days old. Here's another weird thing for you. The air is so dry out there, and it gets so cold at night that it's kind of hard to exactly pinpoint how old the droppings are out there, because they keep the same color, but they don't, like, they're not.
They dry out.
Yeah, they dry out super quick. So you, it's like, around here, you'd be like, oh, that's like a week or two old. But there, it's like, this could be more than, this could be no more than a few days old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think,
but my confidence is spiked because we found those spots where I think they'll be again next year if we're lucky.
Well, I think early season we found those two spots, you know, where we killed ours, and then the other spot where you were, well, the three spots, I guess, that we feel confident about. And, you know, from all the research we've done, part of why elk hunters are so tight-lipped about their spots is because when you find elk, they're usually consistently there year after year. That's typically how it goes. So I think personally, we found these, we can go back here and, you know, opening day, opening, you know, 2-3 days, maybe I think we have a chance at getting on these. And then I think one thing we learned is after opening day, opening weekend, after a lot of people have been in the woods hunting, they'll kind of push out. So we're going to have to go. I believe part of the reason we didn't see any more after this is because we didn't go deep enough. I think even that ridge that you were talking about in the Quakies, Deegan, I think that wasn't quite deep enough. I think that was our best shot at seeing them, because we went deeper than we had. But I think that's when being able to go 5+ miles back and camp overnight and do that sort of thing is, I think that's going to make the difference next year. So, you know, 1-12, I'm going to go out with the same expectation of, you know, if we see one, we got to take advantage because we may not see more. We may not see any. I was watching a video by the Bow Maniac guy, and he killed a little spike. It was like the spikes were maybe like 1.5 feet long on each side, like a small bull. But he talked about how the mountains humbled him. And this guy's a guy who grew up elk hunting, has been elk hunting a ton. I mean, that's what he does. We whitetail hunt, he elk hunts. And
right.
He even was like, you know, I've been humbled this week. So, you know, you go out there and the mountains, the elk, they're going to humble you no matter how confident you are. But I think we've set ourselves up in the future to have even more success just by finding these early spots and then going, okay, we didn't go past, you know, 4 miles back. We probably need to push to 6, 7, 8 miles back into the backcountry if we can, where these elk have been pushed out to by people. And, you know, I think that's where we find additional success after those first few days.
Right. And I would agree with you on that. I think a big thing is we went out there with zero experience and we came back with what feels like a wealth of knowledge for our mm-hmm. first time. I mean, we got to see how these bulls react to calls. We got to see, I mean, we got to be in different areas and see the different sign and kind of be able to understand a little bit more about where we will need to be in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that's either going to be really deep or in really nasty places that nobody else is going to want to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like
hell's hole.
It's like people say with deer hunting or just any type of hunting, no matter how experienced you are, every time you go out, you should learn something. And every day we went out, we learned more. And, right. You know, by no means have we learned everything. I would still consider us very new elk hunters, don't know a whole lot. Like, I wouldn't trust myself to guide someone. But I know now a little bit more that can set me up for success. So those places that Clyde and I went going, why are we not finding elk? Well, now we kind of see why. You know, part of where we went was too low at that time of year. The elevate, we weren't high enough. elevation.
We were still finding sign, but it was all like maybe a week old sign.
Yeah.
And if I can remember correctly, that was the area where we were up in those Quakies one of those last days. We ran into those hunters and they were like, yeah, we found a herd, but they're all on private. Also, that time of year, they weren't really responding to bugles. I guess they were all just together. I think they had said they had bugled back, but they were just like, eh, not really interested. I think on that last day, we probably could have, well, if we had more time, we could have went all the way out there right at that private area and seen if we could have called them out.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that was part of the, you know, didn't go deep enough.
That learning process.
Yeah. Right. So like kind of just to keep it practical and keep it along the lines of things you guys learned. I'm curious, and I want to hear from each of you guys. You guys can bounce ideas off each other, but as it relates to like either gear or expectations, I mean, what's something that you feel like you learned on this hunt? And then what's something you would do different going back, whether it's next year, whether it's a couple years? Is there something that stands out? It can be as simple as, hey, I packed this, I wouldn't pack this next time, or I was expecting this to happen, and next time I would expect this to happen. But I kind of am just curious from your guys' perspective, going out there, like you said, you had no real expectations. You guys didn't really know what you were doing going out there. Is there anything that was like glaringly obvious? Okay, I would change this going out next time.
I think for me, I would probably downsize a lot of the stuff I brought. I think I brought a little bit too much food.
Yep.
Wasn't really happy with how heavy the sleeping bag was. So I think there's like some lighter weight gear I could have went with. Definitely need a different bag. Poor Deegan had to pack out both hindquarters because I couldn't fit them in my bag. Granted, my bag held up great up until I tried to fit that last hindquarter in. But yeah, just lighter weight, which, you know, going ultralight means you're going to spend more money. But it's the buy once, cry once, you know, it was like 80 or 90 bucks on the sleeping bag I have now. Well, I'm wanting to upgrade to a lighter weight one. So I'm going to have to spend 120 to 150 bucks for another sleeping bag.
Yeah. For me, it was definitely, brought too much food. I kind of went 3,000 calories plus. I had a bunch of snacks and crap that I could have cut. Like, I would eat probably two. It depends on kind of how you're hunting too, right? So the day we were going backcountry or the days we would be out all day, two peak refuels honestly would do it for me. I'd have some snacks in there just because I'm like, I want to, you know, maybe I want a snack on a Cliff Bar or something. But I had way too much food. By no means do you want to underpack on food though too. And then for me, I had one more thing I was thinking about and I've completely lost it. Deegan, you go while I think.
Okay. So I'm going to switch it up a little bit and go away from gear and stuff. The biggest thing that I can recall that I remember the most is we're going back to the mountains humbling us. Well, I know a lot of us struggled with not seeing them and not finding fresh sign and stuff. And I think the biggest thing I could say is just to remember to be patient out there. I mean, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. It can happen in an instant. So like, I remember Austin was panicking the day before season opened. He was getting frustrated because they'd been scouting all week and hadn't seen anything. I mean, and it just kind of goes back to, you know, I had to tell him, I was like, look, we still got 8-9 days to hunt. I mean, we're going to be all right. And with that along, I don't think like a spotting scope is really necessary out there. I think a big thing that I realized and remembered and learned is that glassing isn't really going to find the elk in a lot of the areas we were hunting. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of a boots to the ground situation. Find a fresh sign, find some water, find some quakies, and just kind of sit there and wait. I mean, and just throw some cow calls every 15, 20 minutes and just kind of see what happens. So that boils back to patience, but boots to the ground, you know, not looking for elk, looking for sign.
So I remembered what I was going to say. And this is very much if you can afford it, if you have access to it. But a big difference in just morale and recovery and different things was having the camper there.
For sure.
That, like, even just the last night we were there, we showered. And it changed my mood completely. Just, like, just having that access, it's definitely not a necessity. But when I look at it and I go, if I had access to, like, next time if we go out, if I have access to a trailer and if we can pack, you know, if we can haul up enough water to where, you know, maybe midweek we take a shower, that is going to help me go further and keep pushing harder as opposed to sleeping in the cold in the tent. Definitely doable in the tent. I mean, I did it for most of the time there, besides when we slept in the truck. But yeah, I just
gave up and slept in the truck, dude.
Somewhat of a better bed than just sleeping on what you'd use if you were, you know, going backcountry and set up like a spike camp. I think that makes a difference. So even if you, you know, can rent one from someone or something, it's definitely not a necessity, but it's a added bonus just to, I feel like it sets you apart from other people there to be able to push further, go deeper and get to where the elk are, especially early season when that's what you have to do. You know, talking with the agent, like later season when muzzleloader starts, they're able to go with side-by-sides and four-wheelers back further. So it kind of moves the elk back around a little bit and you don't have to go as deep. But the archery where it's a lot of walk-in access, that made a huge difference to me. But yeah, I also, I want to echo what Deegan said is, you know, you kind of, it's that mental toughness that you have to go, I know what I'm doing. I've been hunting before, you know, cause most elk hunters aren't just, this is my first time hunting, going out and hunting an elk. Most have experience hunting whitetail or something. Just rely on what you know. And, you know, like Deegan said, I was a bit panicked just going, why can we not find anything? Like, even the sign we were finding was older sign, you know, based on what we saw. We saw nothing super, super fresh. So it was like, where are these elk at? Like, we know they're in the area, but where are they?
Well, I think what was getting frustrating is we'd seen every other huntable big game species,
mm-hmm.
but no elk.
Yeah. So it was like, what is happening?
So we got there Tuesday at camp, and we just did some like road scouting. So then it was Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday was kind of iffy because I think I had went to town early to go wait for Deegan, and then his dad's truck decided to explode. And
I mean, I did some scouting alone. Like, I climbed up a freaking mountain alone and trying to scout and just could not find anything.
And then it was Friday, Deegan was with us, and we really put in some scouting there. Because then we could finally access that trust land.
Because mm-hmm.
That was another really big limiting factor with our scouting, is we weren't legally allowed to access trust land until a certain date. And that was just frustrating. You know, every spot that we had wanted to look at, we'd come up on and be like, oh, there's that fence saying we can't cross.
Mm-hmm. And that was pretty frustrating.
Yeah, I could see that being frustrating. And I can imagine, too, being out there, and especially just taking off extra time of work, getting out there with the goal of, like, not only seeing elk, but getting a game plan for season starting, and then not seeing any elk and just going into it. I think it makes the story of you guys getting one opening day, opening morning, even crazier. The fact that you guys spent time out there scouting, didn't see anything, and then it came together in like the first hour of opening day.
All it takes is just one.
That's right. So
or two. Or two. I do want to say, like, it was also frustrating for Clyde and I. Like, Deegan didn't necessarily experience this as much, but Clyde and I were putting in average 10 miles a day for no reward. Like, not even like an elk 500 yards away. Like, we were putting in all this walking with packs, you know, and carrying, we weren't carrying our heavy packs, but we were carrying weight, you know, we still needed food and, you know, optics, all that fun stuff. And it was kind of like Clyde and I were kind of like at the point of right before opening day going, we're frustrated, not because of the work we're doing, but the work we're doing and not finding anything to set us up for success. Like, not even like looking off in the distance and going, if we can get there, we know there's an elk over there. So right. that made it hard because we'd walk, you know, 5 miles out and 5 miles back and see moose or mule deer and no elk.
So much mule deer.
Tons of sign that seemed older. So that also added to it, but it comes back to kind of, and I, you know, I feel kind of hypocritical saying this, but it comes down to mental toughness, because I was starting to lose that mental toughness, and it took Deegan kind of, and Deegan's dad, talking to us and just going, you guys got this, keep driving. You have 8 days left. Which that's another thing, is find some guys who will go out and work just as hard as you, and will pick you up when you're feeling down. Because the moment you lose that mental toughness in the mountains are going to kick you in the butt, and you're going to be done.
Man, speaking of getting kicked in the butt, I got scared for you that one day we were out. You know, it got really cold and rainy. You had that little injury going on. I'm like, oh my God, if this gets worse.
That was bizarre, which I guess we can get into that briefly, but you know, I don't know when it happened or something, and I still don't know. I think it has to be like some sort of pulled muscle, abdomen, something. But walking down the mountain, Clyde and I went up and scouted, started coming down the mountain. I started feeling like this pain in like right below my rib cage. And I'm like, something's, you know, it kind of felt like, you know, when like your clothes get caught on hair and start pulling your hair and you're like, oh gosh, kind of felt like that, but a little bit more intense. And I was like, I don't know what this is. And as we got down to the mountain and started just kind of, we hung out there for a little bit and started hiking back, I was like, I got to the point where I had to take off everything and just be like, I don't know what's happening. And when I would touch like just barely touch my skin, it was like excruciating pain. And I, you know, then it started to rain and everything. And I don't know what, to this day, I don't know what happened. Still, like in deer hunting, I felt that pain a little bit, not nearly as intense. So it had to be like a pulled muscle. It kind of felt like it could have been like a hernia at first. And it was like, I mean, I don't know how this would have happened. But yeah, that day I hiked out of there with my trekking poles and nothing else. Like, these guys picked up the weight for me, carried my bow, carried my pack, and we got out of there. And, you know, that night I kind of just was laying. I think I might have been in my tent, might have been in the truck, just going, this is the third day and I'm down. And, you know, thinking about it, going, am I going to have to stay at camp and let these two go out alone? And part of that mental toughness going, I just went, I'm not going to let them down. I'm going to go in with a lighter pack, as light as I can go, you know, not bring my knives, not bring, you know, cut every bit of weight I can. And I'm going to push through for these guys because they've been pushing through for me. And, you know, the next couple days I was in quite a bit of pain. And had to make some adjustments on how I was walking and different things. But pushed through, and by the end of the day, end of camp, I mean, the last couple of days, I was feeling a lot better. So it had to have just been some sort of pulled muscle, something. I still to this day don't know what it was. But yeah, it was, that was a weird day. And I decided that wasn't going to be the end of my trip. I was going to push through, and, you know, even if I was just kind of sitting there watching these two call and video or do whatever, I was going to be there for that moment because I wasn't going to miss a celebration again. Like, also, I wanted to be there for that.
Pro tip for next year, pack more acetaminophen than you think you need.
Yeah.
I was dwindling on my supply.
I went through my supply.
Moleskins. Definitely. Yeah. My feet were falling apart by the second day. I mean, I had two dime-sized blisters on the bottom of my feet from packing out that bowl, and I was falling apart. Like, they were just falling apart on me. And I was like, I was fully prepared to, okay, they're going to bust. I'm going to wrap them in a – or I'm going to slap a Band-Aid on it and wrap some Ace bandages over them and just kind of roll with it. And Clyde's like, no, I got these. Let's throw these on there. And it felt like a skin graft. It was perfect.
Make sure you have a good pair of boots.
Yes.
Like, my pair of boots, my feet were great through the whole thing. My boots are torn up now. Like, I've worn them out in the mornings for deer hunting, and my feet get soaked. So I need a new pair of boots. But a good pair of boots is, in my opinion, top three most important things out there. A good bow, a good pack, and good boots are the three things that I would say you need to have. And and by good, by good bow, a bow you're confident in. That could be like Deegan's dad was rocking a Matthews. What was that?
Matthews Solo Cam.
It was an older looking bow, heavy. Actually, was it heavy? I think it was heavy.
It was light. It was very light because he doesn't have anything on it. That's true. He doesn't even have a quiver on it.
Oh yeah, because he was
those old school leg quivers.
Hey, but he was confident in it. He shot it for the first day and got dialed in perfect, and was rocking that, and was confident that he could hit an animal. So to him, that was his good bow, you know. And while Deegan and I are rocking new Hoyts, that may not be the best for you going out there. So a good bow is a good bow that you're confident in.
Whatever you shoot, practice with beforehand, make sure you're good to go. Because, I mean, nothing, if your gear fails on you out there, you will feel it.
So let's kind of end on a high note here. I feel like if I asked you guys what your favorite moment of the trip would be, you'd probably all say the celebration just after the shot going crazy. That's what my guess would be. So excluding the shooting the elk and the celebration, what was your guys' favorite experience from the trip?
That's tough.
Yeah.
There were so many good moments, so many bad moments too.
I have two favorites. So one is eating that fresh backstrap at camp. Love that. Second one was watching Austin fling his arrows off the side of a mountain one after another. Just thinking, oh, he's not going to do another. Nope. It's just like, oh, there goes that one.
Hey, I recovered 4 of the 5 arrows.
Man, we had to go back after dark and look for your Nox.
Luminox worked great. Deegan, how about you?
So there's two that kind of pop into my mind here. One kind of goes back to the elk a little bit. I thoroughly enjoy corresponding with animals to some extent. Calling is one of my favorite things to do. Like, anytime I go hunting, if you ask me if I want to shoot or call, I'm going to say call if I have to choose between one or the other. So calling those elk and just watching them come in on a string, knowing that I could do that when I've never done it before, was one of my favorite moments of all time, that I had them locked. I mean, when they started to run because I got a little bit skittish, I stopped them again, called them back in. When Austin shot and missed, I stopped him again. I mean, it was insane being able to see that, hey, I did that. Another thing probably has to be after we were all wore out, beat down. I mean, we had packed out that bull. It was miserable all day long. We were all wore out. I was hurting bad. That was only my second day in the mountains, so I had to come back and really, really take care of my body. I mean, I was borderline going to get sick. I had been rained on. I had carried out well over 200 pounds of meat. My hip was locked up. My feet were killing me. My shoulders were killing me because I'm pretty sure I had my pack overloaded a time or two. And I got back to camp and started up a fire, and we all just sat around that fire. I drank some water, took some acetaminophen, or I took ibuprofen, and took a couple hits off of a Boost air canister and went and sat down next to the fire after I changed clothes and just sat there with a bottle of whiskey and just kind of warmed up, and everybody came and sat down. We started swapping stories from the day, and it was just the most surreal thing that people dream of that you see on TikTok from an influencer or something. I mean, you're sitting on the side of a mountain, it's cold, and you got your buddies around after an elk has gotten shot, and you're just enjoying being out there.
For me, there were so many moments that made the trip incredible. Obviously, shooting the elk and everything involved with that, from the calling to the shot to the celebration. Number one, like you said, Cam. Animal-wise, it was so cool to not interact, but be in area where there are animals that are vastly different than here. I mean, Clyde and I one morning were 50 yards from a moose. Like, I have a video of this giant moose, like 50 yards from us.
The moose encounter, yes. Right?
And then camping 1,000 yards from black bear. And, you know, driving in and finding pronghorn in an area where, you know, you're just like, oh, we're just going to drive in here. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, there's a herd of pronghorn.
Right next to the fence.
And then also seeing antelope, because as you know from last episode, those are different.
I was tired. Leave me alone.
I think the coolest moment happened throughout the trip, and that, or one of the coolest moments, I should say, happened throughout the trip, and that was watching friends become brothers. You know, and I'll just speak for myself. I'm sure they have other times when we helped carry the load, but like from what we just talked about with when I kind of got injured and they picked up that, you know, the weight for me, literally the weight for me, or the fact that kind of going tagging with the elk, you know, I was able to shoot it, but it was a complete team effort. And it was a team effort all the way till we got it to the processor. I mean, we got down the mountain and Deegan's dad took off, at like 4 o'clock to get to the processor at 5, which the processor was like an hour away, maybe more. To get the meat there so we didn't lose any of it. I mean, just the little things like that, all of us picking up that weight and becoming brothers in the mountains was the coolest thing for me. And I, you know, like I think back to the shooting competition, this just shows what it means to go from friends to brothers, is like the shooting competition we had me shooting last. But in that moment where we shot the elk, it wasn't about, oh, the legal side of it, like, oh, Clyde won that. No, it was about, we're going to do what it takes to kill this bull. And the celebration after was all of us saying, we did this. Like, we put this together. Every piece came together, from the videoing to the shot to the calling. It all came together perfect. And that was not just the story in that moment, but the trip. And I thought that was really just an awesome time with awesome people. You know, the time sin in camp where you're, I mean, I'm walking through the trip now, but like just the time sin in camp, bonding, you know, opening up about things that, you know, we don't necessarily ever talk about, was really cool, really special. And I mean, just absolutely amazing trip, and couldn't have asked for a better group to go with. Obviously we would have liked to have the whole Just One team there to help put bulls on the ground and help pack out the bull that,
yeah, we could have used a couple extra strong backs out there.
But
it was the mule or somebody with mules in town was about to get a call really quick there.
if we killed one deeper, we were definitely doing that.
What was terrible? So real quick, Deegan and I got the first load of meat down. We're sitting there like, you know, huffing and puffing at the truck, and we're just looking up. We're like, we got to do that at least two more times.
Mm-hmm. Brutal.
What's crazy is, you know, that you wouldn't have thought that would have taken more than a few hours, even though we had to make two more trips. That took us like 15 hours to get that bull out. I mean, when we sat down, like, it was hard to get back up about the second trip.
It was a lot of work. And, you know, that's it goes back to saying went from friends to brothers. I mean, finding that mental toughness to push through that. And we had a relatively easy pack out in terms of how much people have to pack out. Like our bull was shot and died on a trail. The trail was downhill for all but maybe half mile. You know, and it was only 2.25 miles back. So, I mean, relative to what other people have had to do, it wasn't a bad pack out, but it was still a lot of work. Carrying all that out was a lot of work. And those two, Clyde and Deegan, did their fair share because I only had one really, really heavy load. They had the other heavy loads and put in the work. So honestly, thank you guys. I don't know if I've ever even said that for helping pack that out. But hey, you got meat for it. So
that's true.
But anyways, we'll go ahead and kind of wrap this episode up because we could go on for days talking about the elk trip, breaking it down, figuring things out. But we got to get to deer season at some point. And man, elk was just the start of the season that we're having. Can't wait to share that with you guys. But yeah, I guess that last part, we'll call that the around the campfire, just the wrapping it up part. because we are recording this in the middle of our work day, so we kind of got to get back to work. But thank you guys for listening. Yeah, go ahead, Deegan.
I was going to say one last thing. When you go out there, be sure you're just embracing the suck, enjoying, and trying your best to enjoy every single second of it, because I think we can all agree we were more than ready to come home after 9 days, but the second we crossed the Colorado border, we were all wanting to go back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just one of those deals where, like, instantly we're like, I'm ready to go back now.
I'm ready. Home, it's still September, my guy. Our tags are still good.
Tags are still active.
I don't know about Austin, but, like, me and Deegan, our tags are still good.
I have a bear tag.
Hey, my birthday is Thursday. Who wants to pay for gas for me to go back out and shoot an elk?
I mean, oh, dude, just ride with me, man. Just ride with me. We're good.
I'll ride in the truck bed. But there was one thing I wanted to add about the trip, and it was cool seeing, it'll be quick, but one thing I have to say is it was cool seeing God through that. I know Clyde said on another podcast, like, that's where he connects with God the most is in nature. And it was really cool getting to interact with elk, moose, mule deer, in every way, shape, and form, even if that was just seeing them. But just, I mean, the sunrises, the sunsets, the mountains, it was just all the beauty that God has created was so cool to experience. And, like, it's still, like, you know, driving in, I was going, I get to hunt here. We get to hunt here. And probably outside of maybe Alaska, one of the most beautiful places we'll get to hunt. And this elk, like, we have pictures of this elk, and it's just like, people have asked me if we moved the elk from where it died, because they're like, the pictures you have with the mountains in the background, and it's like on a valley, and it's just like, no, like, that's literally where it lied, because one, you can't move an elk. Like, you have to have, like, Cam Haines, Joe Rogan, and, like, five other guys to be able to pick up an elk. But it was just like,
I couldn't even roll it.
Right? I had to roll it myself and about killed myself because the antlers flung up at my face. I was like, oh gosh. But all that to say, like, it was just remarkable, the creation that we got to see and interact with. It was so vastly different from where we hunt, that it was just a that right there made it special. It's just being out there and getting to see God's creation that is so different than what we hunt. So with that, we'll wrap it up. We got to get back to work. Thank you guys for tuning in. We really appreciate it. We have a lot of fun doing this, even though, you know, heck, we would probably do this even if people didn't listen, because this is just, it's fun talking about this stuff. It's fun talking about hunting and all that. So, but we really appreciate you guys tuning in. If you like this episode, leave it a rating, a review, and yeah, share it with your friends. That's the one I missed. Share it with your friends, because that helps get it out to more people, helps us have bigger, cooler guests on that are definitely more experienced hunters than us that can provide a lot of knowledge. And with that, we'll go ahead and wrap this one up. Don't forget, all it takes is just one.